You're going to have people dragging their feet. You're going to have people who refuse to be part of the process. And if you do not have people who are willing and actively engaged in the process, there's no way that your outcome can be successful.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. The Industry 4.0 initiatives offer significant opportunities and require executing large transformation projects with success. If not planned well, the changes could cause substantial disruption and become a bottleneck to your growth. Such projects require careful planning and a phased approach to ensure these projects success and meet your growth objectives. In today's episode, we have our guest Dave Griffith, who discusses why manufacturers must look for low-hanging fruits when exploring the path of Industry 4.0. He also explains what Industry 4.0 means to different manufacturing verticals and how they can take a phased approach to make these transformation projects successful. Finally, he shares several stories of his recent successes using the phased approach. Let me introduce Dave to you. Most people would call Dave a manufacturing consultant. He considers himself a dreamsmith. His goal is simple: help you achieve your manufacturing dreams. His goal is to shepherd the next generation of solutions to the plant floor and leverage those solutions to the greatest extent possible. After spending more than a decade in the automation and manufacturing industries, Dave focuses on two client groups: manufacturing facilities looking to go through transformational processes, and number two, service providers looking to launch and grow next generation solutions. Dave has a very straightforward approach: dream big, start small, show ROI. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hey Dave, welcome to the show.
Hey Sam, thank you so much for having me on. Very excited to be here.
And super excited as well. To kick things off, do you want to start with your personal story and what you are focusing on these days?
Sure, happy to. Hey everyone, my name is Dave Griffith. I run a company called Kaplan Solutions. We work in the manufacturing industry, and we help companies go through transformational processes such as Industry 4.0 and digital transformation processes. We've got more than a decade of experience, all the way from OEM machine equipment builders through the software and automation industry. And at this point, as I said, our goal is to work on Industry 4.0 digital transformation initiatives in which we are helping companies go through a phased approach and helping them understand what these processes mean to them, as opposed to being overwhelmed with one big thought.
Okay, so before we get into the things that you have described, what we typically do is we ask a standard question with every single guest that we get, Dave. So what is your perspective on growth?
Yeah, so this is actually one of my favorite questions that you guys ask everyone, Sam. And my perspective of growth is the output of doing all the things correctly. If you build a good company, if you have a good product, if you treat your employees well, the outcome that you're going to have is growth. And so that is one of those the reason why we should continue to work and strive both internally and externally to do well as a company and to do well as business leaders.
So a couple of things with respect to your phased approach, the one that you mentioned, during your intro. So what is phased approach and why it is important for Industry 4.0 initiatives, Dave?
Yeah, so when you look at an Industry 4.0 initiative, You know, most people think of it as an extremely expensive 5-year-long process that at some point someone is going to come in and everything is going to work correctly. In the real world, I have not seen that happen. I've seen lots of struggles with that. So we have been working on a phased approach, and the concept is simple, right? You come up with your idea, what you want the output of your Industry 4.0 initiative to become. After you come up with that, you figure out a way in which you can start small and that you can prove to everyone this is going to work and start and have a good return on investment. And so it's a phased approach in which we go through, we show return on investment, and then we're able to continue to use the money that we've saved or created and continue to go down an Industry 4.0 initiative.
Okay, it's very interesting that you talk about, you know, the output of the initiative, and it almost seems like the backward approach. In my opinion, that's how the things should be done, and you are doing it in the right manner. So give me an example of the work that you have done where you started from the output and then you traced it backwards. So basically what you are doing, in my opinion, is you are actually defining your KPIs and the ROI that you want to get from your initiative, and then you are describing defining the whole plan until the beginning, and then you start doing the plan. Is that accurate?
So what generally happens is we're going to go through some sort of like road mapping engagement. And that concept is we're going to spend time at the facility. We're going to talk to the champions, the stakeholders. We're going to go talk to the operations and the people who are actually working at the manufacturing floor. And then once we go through and we're having these conversations, we're going to understand not only where they are today, but also where they want to be. And then once we understand where they want to be, we're going to go and roadmap, you know, a phase one, a phase two, a phase three, and find ways that we can sustainably get them to that end goal.
Okay, so when you talk about, you know, taking from one step to the next, what are some of the critical success factors that you have seen in terms of defining this roadmap? And where do you think people fail most of the time? Because one of the comments that you made is, you know, most of the time these initiatives may not be successful. So what is your opinion in terms of critical success factors?
So I would say that the number one critical success factor is that the organization is actually ready to go through one of these initiatives. I have seen where one person wants to go through an Industry 4.0 initiative. And if that one person is not the business owner and they can then go help leverage the rest of their operations group there, you are not going to have success in the end. You have to, as an organization, be ready to go through an organizational change, which the output is going to be one of these Industry 4.0 initiatives. If, and I have seen experience with a handful of different facilities, the organization is not ready to go through this change, you're going to have people dragging their feet. You're going to have people who refuse to be part of the process. And if you do not have people who are willing and actively engaged in the process, there's no way that your outcome can be successful.
Yeah, I agree with your assessment there. The stakeholder management and the change management is definitely very important. But before we get there, I had a question related to Industry 4.0 initiative. Mm-hmm. So in my experience, Industry 4.0 could mean different things to different people. I mean, it could be all over the place. So can you define what a Industry 4.0 initiative is?
I think that is a fantastic point. Thank you for bringing it up, Sam. And while I could define what Industry 4.0 means to me, I know some people who define it as basically the use of the internet while going through things. In my mind, what is more important than how you and I would define it is how the actual facility would define it. So when we go through one of these road mapping processes, when we're understanding where they are and where they want to go, I ask them what Industry 4.0 means to them. What does this transformational initiative mean to them? And then where do they want to go? And by helping them kind of close their eyes, think about where they want to go, have that, you know, big dream, if you will, we're then able to go through the process of delivering the Industry 4.0 initiative that is what that facility is looking for.
Right. So let's say if I'm a manufacturer and I'm trying to explore whether I should be utilizing the Industry 4.0 initiative or not. So when you talk about use of the internet, in my opinion, it could mean Industry 1.0, 2.0, 3.0, or 4.0. right? So it could mean anything. So let's say I find the manufacturer and you are trying to advise me. I'm your customer, Dave. So, you know, if you want to ask any questions, you can ask me any questions. But let's do a little bit of role play here in terms of you are advising me on Industry 4.0 initiative. So how would you take me from point A to point B?
Yeah, so it's one of those, Sam, where we would sit down and my questions to you would be along the lines of, okay, Sam, where are you today? And then where do you want to go? And quite literally, most of the time, I'm asking them what an Industry 4.0 initiative means to them. Can I walk you through an example of one of these processes in how we started from point A and got to the end goal of one of these Industry 4.0 initiatives?
That's exactly going to put things into perspective, so please do that.
Perfect. So to set the scene a little bit, I was brought in by one of my vendors to a facility that prints the warning labels and the ingredients that go in medicine. It's one of those folded pieces of paper that they literally joked everyone throws away and no one reads. You know the ones I'm talking about, Sam?
Yeah, I think I'm following.
Yeah, perfect. So they did a lot of printing. They did a lot of folding. They had a variety of different pieces of paper, and they had a lot of different legacy systems. And so when we came in, we kind of showed them what we could do Industry 4.0-wise. We showed them a variety of SCADA and MES and other digital and data analytics systems, what we had done in the future or what we had done in the past and how we could help them. And we were having the conversation. And there was an intern that turned as to like a floating operations person that had done some measuring and saw that they were, you know, approximately 17% efficient. And we're like, okay, wow. So that seems like we need to do a better job collecting the data. And we looked at the old machines and only a couple of them had controllers and very few of them had controllers that we could actually pull data off. And so we're like, wow, this could potentially be an expensive implementation. But as we continued to talk about the situation, what we realized that one of their major issue was in scheduling and how their scheduling is running. Now, historically, they had a person that would come in and literally with pencil and paper go and schedule all the runs over the course of the day. And so between some of their runs, they had to have changeovers in which they were physically changing, you know, the machines for their setups. And it was not an uncommon thing where they would come in, they would have a run. There was 4 hours of changeover. They would have a second run. And then there was another 4 hours of changeover back to the original setup just over the course of a couple of shifts. And this was killing their efficiency. And so as we continued down, we had the conversation of how can we leverage the tools that we have in order to help them with this particular situation. And their budget was fairly tight. I think we were looking at approximately the $10,000 to $15,000 range. And so what we did is we helped them with a scheduler tool. And to go back to the internet, this scheduler tool actually was running in the cloud. And the reason why it was running in the cloud is because we could then help them scale it to the other 12 or so locations that they had. And so something like this would require us to go through, sit down, understand, you know, the quote unquote rules, which is how they go schedule, which is, you know, what happens through one of these changeovers. And then that means that we're going through the process to understand how they're running and then determine what those changes look like. And the main benefit of one of these automated scheduler tools is that it's going to help them put together the schedule that is going to have the least amount of downtime between the runs. So that way we're not running something that, for instance, needs to get folded 10 times, then changing paper sizes and then going back to the original setup, which was one of the issues that they were having because they were just scheduling it like package, like line one can run A, C, and D. And so we'll just run it A, C, and then D. And so by automating this, we were able to help the person who normally spent their whole shift go through, confirm the schedule, and then go through the process of doing higher level tasks. And then as we were going through this process, we were able to put up some large, inexpensive, big screen televisions. We were able to show everyone on the floor what's coming up, if we're on schedule, if we're ahead of schedule, etc. And then we have almost always had extreme amounts of success with these projects. You know, normally we see an increase between about 17 and 32% boost in productions when instituting something like this. And then to draw back to the idea of starting small, with this goal, we were able to take the success, the money they saved from it, we were able to double down into the next phase. In this particular example, we were able to add some sensors, some data collection on the legacy devices so we could do a better job of calculating the OEE, the overall equipment effectiveness, and then help visualize the data on the screen to find some additional productivity spikes and availability. Most of the time, just by allowing people on the floor to understand where they are in relation to schedule, it's human nature to want to, you know, be on schedule or to beat the person who was on the other shift. And so just by going through that process, a very relatively straightforward Industry 4.0 initiative, we were able to help them modernize and take advantage of what they were doing.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, I love this story, to be honest. In fact, I mean, what I have personally seen, because obviously, you know, I visit a lot of different manufacturing facilities as well. And some of these folks would claim that they are fairly automated. They have their ERP system running, but their scheduling is going to be running on either the spreadsheet or paper. So that's the story that I really like to hear. So thank you for that. And since we are talking about the phased approach here, Dave, we are going to be taking slightly phased approach with this conversation as well. So initially, when you started this story and you mentioned that the operational or the operations intern was able to measure the efficiency to be 17%. So let's say if I'm a manufacturer and I want to measure how efficient I am with my operations, how is that project going to look like with respect to the cost, budget, and schedule? And the only objective that I have is I want to measure how efficient I am with my operations.
No, so that's a good question, Sam. And in this particular example, I always like to bring it up because he was literally out there on the floor with a stopwatch. I'm sure he was probably one of the most hated people in the facility because as all the folks are out there running on the line, he's out there with a stopwatch and his notebook. And while we were there,
nobody likes timekeepers.
Nobody likes timekeepers. And so while we were there, he's like showing us the notebook. We're walking on the plant floor. I'm pretty sure some guys and ladies are giving him some side eye. But he came up with this number because he was literally out there with a stopwatch measuring how long it takes. Kind of in addition to that, they had done, the line is going to run. They've got, 3 to 10 people on any particular line, depending upon the run. And then they literally had to leave, shut down the line. Someone had to walk into the scheduler's office to get the next piece of paper so they knew what the next job was. So they were extremely inefficient. And honestly, we see most people who aren't looking at efficiency are generally in the high teens to low 20% efficiency. So if you're looking to measure how efficient you are, other than you're probably not very efficient, you know, you could do it as simple as an intern with a stopwatch can go out there and measure it. And in my experience, that is the first realization of, hey, we're capacity constrained. How can we go through the process of pushing more product through? Most of the time, until you are to the point of having to look to spend a ridiculously large number of dollars on a new line, on a new machine, you don't look to see how efficient you are. And then when we're looking to go through a process in which we're measuring the OEE, the overall equipment efficiency or effectiveness, you know, that is highly dependent upon where you want. You know, I've seen, you know, low 5-digit projects all the way to work with companies that have spent, you know, $10 million on one phase. In my mind, and with this phased approach, it's a how can you go through the process of getting the most bang for the buck, if you will, so you can help visualize, everyone can understand where they are. And then once you are starting to recoup some of that money, you can then look to expand the project. Again, it's all about a phased approach and scalable solutions.
Yeah, and it's interesting that, you mentioned the point about hiring the intern. And typically when people hire intern, they don't actually consider the opportunity cost of the intern. But if you look at the opportunity cost, and I don't know, you know, how much the intern may be making, maybe, you know, $30,000-$40,000 a year, maybe $20 per hour. I really don't know. But the intern is going to take some time. So I don't know if the project is going to be for 2-3 months, 4 months. But there is opportunity cost associated with that. That is something that most people don't know how to measure or they sort of ignore. So let's say if I'm hiring a consultant like you, Dave, are you going to be slightly more efficient in providing the same data that my intern will be able to do while considering the opportunity cost? What is your perspective on that?
So that's an interesting question, Sam. I should say in this particular example, I believe the intern spent about a week out there. And it's not something that I would have a person with a stopwatch out there for weeks or months at a time.
Let's make one thing very clear, Dave. If you are going to hold the stopwatch on my floor, I'm not hiring you, Dave.
Exactly. No. I agree with that, Sam. And my other point is, I am not the right person to go and hold a stopwatch on the floor. People are going to pay me too much money for them to want me to spend my time holding a stopwatch on the floor. And if we need to go through a process like that, that is something that we could look and see if there's an intern that we could grab for a week in order to do that. And we could help them, you know, put together some basic calculations, or we could look at bringing in a temp, something like that, to bring in some additional manpower who is local to that facility in order to help us measure what the current efficiency looks like.
Okay, interesting. So let's go back to some of the analysis that you had provided with respect to your story. So you mentioned that you had 70% efficiency to begin with, and then you were able to get roughly 17 to 32%. So when you do these projects, Dave, do you typically look at, let's say, if I have a machine that may not be performing to its efficiency, so one approach could be that I put a sensor there, and then I try to get some data from it and see how the machine is performing. Or the second approach could be I could actually get the modern machine that could actually have the industry 4.0 capabilities inbuilt. So when you do these projects, do you do the cost-benefit analysis as well in terms of what is going to be right way to approach a problem?
So yeah, I guess the easy question or the easy answer to that is yes. I should say that there are not necessarily industry 3.0 machines versus industry 4.0 machines. Most of these machines you're going to buy from an OEM equipment manufacturer. They're going to come in potentially guaranteeing you some percentage of efficiency, and they're going to train your people to the point of being able to run the machine. As to what happens after the handover and how efficient you actually run is generally not to the level of where you want to be. So we have worked with people who have legacy machines. I had mentioned before, we work with, I once was in a factory and these guys were running, you know, literally World War II machines, you know, 1940s machines, high speed production that's ran that way for, you know, 60 or 70 years. They're not going to change it. And I've walked into facilities that have brand new CNC machines, and depending upon what their production runs look like, there are always additional ways to look at efficiency. So most of the time when we look at efficiency, we're looking at it over the course of a process or over the course of a line, especially if there's material movement in there. And then after we've looked at that, what we do is we look at, I call them the lowest hanging fruit, right? There are reasons why we're not performing at various different times. And then we do our best in order to pluck that lowest hanging fruit in order to increase their efficiency. As I mentioned, that 17 to 32%, when we institute some scheduling and visualization, in my experience, that is generally the visualization process of helping everyone understand where they are is some of the lowest hanging fruit in most facilities.
So obviously the scheduling is always the big problem area in my experience for most manufacturers, whether they agree with it or not. Okay, sometimes they might be too complacent. So I completely agree. But from your experience, other than scheduling, have you seen anything else where you may have potential to optimize?
Yeah, so beyond the scheduling, we look and have lots of conversations with companies that are capacity constrained, right? They're looking to increase their capacity, but they don't want to buy, you know, another $5 million line, or they've physically run out of space in the building to go ahead to put another line in there. So that's when we go and we look at one of these OEE situations to understand where they are. And I have seen a wide variety of different issues. You know, it is not uncommon that it could potentially be a supply chain issue. And one of the reasons why, you know, the company is down is because they literally have run out of their product. And if they've run out of their product, they cannot run their product down the line, or they've run out of labels. We've come across a variety of different issues. The goal is to understand, you know, where they are, and then potentially the phase one is to help them understand where they are so that we can see what the problem is. And if the problem is we're running out of raw materials, it's the, okay, let's focus on the supply chain and let's see what we can do to get everything connected.
Okay, so you talk a lot about machines, but I have seen, in some of the manufacturing verticals where they don't even use a lot of machines. I'm talking about some of the hand assembly shops. And the hand assembly shops could be, let's say, the configuration of retail shelves, or it could be the cables of the telecom equipment. And you'll be surprised that, I mean, they are done using hand assembly. But I have seen firsthand that they are actually making this with, you know, the hand assembly process. Can you believe this? So let's say if you are going to a hand assembly shop and you are looking for some of the areas of improvement, what would be your recommendation for these hand assembly shops?
So with the hand assembly shops, we've done some work with those groups. We've done some work with the hand assembly shops. We've done a series of work with a company that does uniforms, right? So the uniforms come in, they need to be pressed. The pressing is a manual process. So as they go through that, you know, they want to find ways in order to increase efficiency. So we went through a process where we basically put a couple of lights, a green light and a red light up. We measured the speed of the conveyor belt and we were able to measure the output, and we were able to help them understand where they were in the process as to their quota. Now, most of these people were actually paid by piece. And so what they wanted to do is they wanted to press as many pieces as they could so that the money they made at the end of the day was the most that they possibly could. So just doing some basic visualization, and the visualization is something that I talk about a lot, is exceptionally helpful, not only for those manual processes, but also and especially in instances in where the outcome is based off of the quantity or the quota.
Okay, amazing. So we are going to shift the gears a bit. We have been talking the micro perspective here, and I like to take the macro perspective as well. So in your experience, do you see the Industry 4.0 approach to be applicable for specific manufacturing verticals? When you go through different manufacturing verticals, do you see the Industry 4.0 opportunity in specific verticals? Do you have any perspective on that?
So I would say Industry 4.0, because it has such a vast, you know, opportunity, and it means different things for different companies, has applications in all verticals. As to if it's right for that particular group at the time because of the change management and the organizational change that we've talked about is a different question. But across verticals, there are Industry 4.0 applications.
Okay, amazing. So with respect to your phased approach, what else do manufacturers need to know before they consider any initiatives?
So again, the big question is, are we ready to go through one of these? And then the next question is understanding where kind of that low-hanging fruit, understanding where the biggest opportunities lie, and then finding generally trusted partners in order to help lead them through this. And when you're looking for someone to help lead you through this, it may be inside of the organization, it may be outside of the organization, because you're looking for people who have very specific skills and tasks. And as you're going through this, make sure that you have conversations, make sure that these are people who know what they're talking about and have gone through these situations and scenarios and applications.
Okay, amazing. So we are roughly at 28 minutes right now, Dave, and typically we record for 25 to 30 minutes. So in your opinion, did you want to cover anything else that we were not able to touch as part of this conversation.
So, Sam, I think we did a really good job. Do you think that there's anything in particular that your listeners, you know, your general listener group would benefit from if we hit a particular topic or particular situation?
So I think, you know, from the phased approach, we got the idea from the philosophy perspective that, you know, we need to make sure that they are ready for the initiative. The mindset is there. That's well and good. But I don't know if we got the real execution plan in terms of how to start on the initiative. Would you like to touch a bit on that?
How to actually start? Like how to start phase one? Is that the question?
Yeah. So basically you mentioned that, you know, we need to identify the low hanging fruit. So I got the picture that, you know, some of the low hanging fruit could be, you know, just getting the stopwatch, finding the areas with respect to the scheduling. You also mentioned some of the things such as, you know, just putting a sensor in a machine, try to get the data, try to put the monitor, which is well and good. But let's say if I'm considering the larger initiative, maybe I'm replacing a machine on my shop floor, and if I want to go from point A to point B, how would you define the roadmap?
Yeah, so if we are looking to, you know, go down and actually talk about a physical roadmap, again, we're going to have a conversation, we're going to understand where you are, we're going to understand where you want to be, and we're going to help you go down this process of catching the low-hanging fruit and actually implementing some of these solutions. So if you're looking to become more efficient, again, some of the easy low-hanging fruit, as we talked about, is scheduling, is data visualization. Again, looking at putting even relatively inexpensive TVs from like Best Buy or Walmart on the floor to help visualize some of this information so that the groups know where they are. It is human nature that if you see where you are as opposed to where you're supposed to be versus schedule, or you see where you are compared to your friends on the second shift, you want to work faster, produce more just because of that. And so if we can help visualize that data and give people the opportunity to see where they are, then we're going to almost certainly and instantaneously get a significantly more or a significantly larger amount of output.
Okay, amazing. Love it. Do you have any last-minute closing thoughts, Dave, before we close this?
No, I appreciate everyone. I appreciate, Sam, for you coming on, everyone coming out here to take a listen. I have put together a little bit of information on the website, dave-griffith.com, on the Digital Transformation Quick Start Guide, in which I talk about five simple steps in order to go through to get you guys started on your digital transformation, or in this case, Industry 4.0 initiative.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for your time, Dave. Love the story. Love the insight.
Perfect. Thank you, Sam.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Dave, please visit dave-griffith.com. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Jason Chester from Infinity QS, where we discuss the challenges today's manufacturers face with changing consumer behavior. Also, the interview with Kurt Anderson from B2B Tail, who touches on what custom manufacturers need to know about starting their e-commerce journey. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.